Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Now, The Telegraph reports that next week Boris Johnson is launching a publicity campaign to get people back into the office. The paper also reports that ministers are warning that people are vulnerable if they're working from home from being laid off. James, to start us off, do you think ministers are right to say this about people being at risk of losing their jobs? And maybe a slightly separate point is in, is this the best way to sort of get people back into the office, is to sort of by instilling them with a bit of fear there?
So I think it's funny that things that one wouldn't have expected, but kind of working from home has become the kind of wedge issue of 2020. People on both sides of the issue are digging themselves in ever more firmly into their position. People who are working from home say, yes, European countries have got more people back than us, but that's why the virus is surging again in France. It's because people are going to work. People on the other side say, oh my word, we're going to have our economic lunch eaten by the fact that all these other countries have got people back to work, and think of all the unemployment, and how are you going to have a public transport system if no one commutes, etc., etc., etc. Now, I mean, in reality, even with a vaccine, there are going to be some lasting post-pandemic changes. I don't think business travel is going to come back in the same way. I think those days of people flying to kind of Moscow for a meeting and then flying back in the afternoon have probably gone. But I also think that we are being slightly unrealistic about working from home in this respect, which is, I think everyone has been living off their fat reserves, essentially. During lockdown, it was much easier to deal with colleagues because they had a kind of pre-existing relationship with them. If working from home is going to become a permanent thing, in 10 years' time, you're going to have a whole bunch of people who've never met their colleagues face-to-face or met them very rarely. And how do you induct people into a kind of company culture and an ethos if they never come to an office? I mean, that's the, you know, how do you replicate that informal transmission of knowledge that you get? How do you motivate people? How do you check that everyone's doing okay, kind of thing? So I think there are pluses and minuses that people need to examine. I mean, frankly, the biggest problem for the government is that asking people to go back into the office will make people worse off financially. Because right now, lots of people have been saving money because they have not been paying their commuting costs. And either that is, you know, not filling up their car as much, or not paying for their expensive season ticket or their expensive tube travel or bus travel. And so, I mean, the big challenge to the government is that you're not only asking people, obviously there are some people who are genuinely worried about the virus still. There are other people who are worried about having to, you know, give up an hour and a half of their day to commuting. And then I mean, the third thing, which is probably the most important factor, is that people don't like the fact that that extra bit of money that they have had every month in their bank account will go if they go back to the office.
I mean, Fraser, how do you address that? I mean, sort of, some would say the point of a Conservative government is to make people better off. And, you know, should the government be telling people to sort of take the hit and travel into the office?
The point of a Conservative government is to give people liberty and to promote social cohesion. And it's funny, I was smiling when James was saying that people are going to save money commuting, John, because you live, where is it?
In the Midlands, in Stafford.
The commute from Stafford to London will be a fair old expense, a fair old schlep. You're a case study, I think, John, and somebody who, for whom commuting is a significant chunk of your time. And when we went into lockdown, all of a sudden, rather than having a commute as, what is it, 90 minutes each way?
Yeah, around 2 hours each way.
2 hours each way, right? So rather than having like 4 hours of journey and 8 hours of work, you had 8 hours of work. Now, your life would have been a lot better there. So you're a case study, actually, of somebody who is on the borderline here. But then again, it depends. There are benefits to being in an office. Do they outweigh the travel? And that is the calculation that a lot of people will be making. Now, I think this debate is slightly biased towards Twitter. Twitter is full of people who work from home, and because they don't have colleagues, they're far more likely to spend their time on Twitter tweeting away to people. It's the if you're a freelancer, you basically miss the comity of an office, the ecosystem. It's human nature, so of course you'd be spending more time on social media, exchanging messages with people you don't know. So if you were to take Twitter as a sort of arbiter of this, you would say, oh, working from home is hugely popular. We've found a new way of working. Now, what ministers are worried about, and I think they're right to be worried about this, is to think, well, let's look further down the line here. Companies here, what do they want to do? Save money. If this has forced them to find a model whereby you can have freelancers working from home, or even staff working from home, then the staff working from home becomes very expendable, very transferable. So the government can look 6 months, 12 months down the line here and think, okay, if this trend continues, our cities become ghost cities, if there's lots of home working, it will not be long before companies manage to find cheaper staff. Now, sure, they might do that in London, moving people from London to the regions, or they might do it by simply offshoring. The other thing ministers are worried about, and rightly so, is unemployment. Right now it's about 1.3 million. Soon it's going to be 3 million. It's going to more than double. It might even go beyond that. So right now we are in the calm before the storm. In a few months' time, we will be talking about unemployment and people losing their jobs. Now, to go back to your question, what's the point of a Conservative government? Just to try to minimise this impact. You do not want to preside over an economy where people are being seen as basically a hassle. If you're a company, do you really want to hire somebody who could be trying to sue you for not having a COVID-style environment? You might start to regard people as something who are not worth the hassle, certainly not in the office. So what the government's trying to do, I think, is to encourage people to get back to work. Now, how they do this will be very important. The Telegraph story today is quite striking because it's basically ministers, unnamed ones, are giving a briefing, your job will be at risk unless you show up. Now, that is very different to the message which I, in my Telegraph column today, suggested Boris Johnson should do. I thought he should take Eat Out to Help Out as his model. That's been hugely successful. And people have been doing it not just to get a tenner off their bills. They've been doing it because they want to help out. They want to help heal their communities, to sponsor the companies and the restaurants. They still want to be there in 6 months' time. I think if you ask people to show up to help out, as it were, go to work to protect your ecosystem, to protect the companies you rely on around work, to protect the environment where younger people can learn from older people. Here at The Spectator, our model entirely depends on being able to take people fairly young. I mean, John, you joined us as a trainee this time last year. You're now our news editor. We don't have a formal training system in The Spectator, but what we do have is an office environment where you can witness the mistakes that people like me make and you can hopefully learn from those mistakes. So it is the informal training that an office provides that is absolutely crucial for training, promotion, from taking people to higher skills, higher salaries. Without the office ecosystem, that won't happen. So a Conservative government ought to be very worried that this informal training, informal development, informal upskilling of the workforce will not be happening if everybody's working from home.
Fraser, you say the government ought to be doing this, but it seems, James, we've seen a bit of mixed messaging from different ministers about the importance of coming back to work. How big do you think the sort of the split in cabinet is about this issue?
I think the thing which no one is certain about is you're trying to balance what these two tightropes, the economic tightrope and the public health tightrope, right? And which one are you more worried about? Some people think, oh my word, especially given the fact that there is no test and trace app, but having lots of people on busy commuter forms of transport is not going to be a good thing, and therefore we risk pushing the virus numbers up. And you know, the argument these ministers would make is that let's get schools back, let's see where the numbers go, and if everything's looking good, then you can move on. The argument that would be made by other ministers, which Fraser makes in his column today, is, you know, if people don't go back at the beginning of September, when are they going to go back? What's the alternative date? Schools return next week, so all the people who've been saying, well, you know, childcare makes this an impossibility, that problem is solved for them. At what moment do people go back? And then I think the third question is, to what extent are these permanent shifts? And I think one of the big challenges politically for the government is, in the 2010s, we had a recovery that was very weak on productivity but strong on jobs. I think this one way around is going to be the opposite, because what companies are doing is they're working out how they can operate with fewer people all the time. What can technology solve? Where can technology be the fix? And I think that is going to pose some really big employment challenges, because as more and more retail moves online rather than high street, you need far fewer people in an online retailer than in a high street retailer. And on this is going to go. And I think this is a really big challenge. And I think there is an argument, which is, you know, the government should just embrace creative destruction, this shift to a new economy. The problem with this shift to a new economy is I think it probably has quite high structural unemployment for a while.
You bet. And also, it is a low-skill model as well. I mean, it's funny, we have never properly studied the role of the office in training people and upskilling people. It's always been a given. But we're going to end up in a situation that, as Joni Mitchell once put it, we're not going to know what we had until it's gone. So only when we've got people isolated at home, working from their kitchen table and told it's a job, are we going to realise that those people simply will not be able to work up a ladder. Now, I know that obviously lots of companies are different. I always see The Spectator as a company which is always changing and always growing. We need to talk to each other. We need the nervous system of the office to be together. There'll be some accountancy jobs where you simply don't grow or develop in that way. So working together won't be as important. I do understand that. But right now, one of the problems Britain's got is a low skill problem. We need higher skilled people. Now, one way of doing that is improving the education system, but that is a very slow way of doing it. The real upskilling we need to do is amongst the workforce. We need people to be trained. One of the arguments for Brexit was that it will make it harder for employers to import people rather than train the people that they've got. But you need environments to train people. That will be a work environment. And we've been worrying about automation for quite some time now. I've been relatively relaxed about it, thinking, well, automation's always been there. Until in January, only a few months ago, our economic problem was that we had not enough people to take the jobs the companies wanted to hire. Now, I was so pleased to live in a country that had that problem because it forces employers to be really imaginative about the sort of people that they hire. They will go on to give offers to people who are in their second year at university. They will offer training. You get people competing for workers. That is the sort of economy you want to live in. That's all about to change. We're about to get Thatcher-style 3 million on the dole, and the power then flips back to employers. Now, even though I'm an employer, that is not a model that I want to see. So this is why I am really quite worried about what's to come. And I'm worried about the lack of worry. I'm worried about how there's only a handful of people who think that this working from home model is not going to lead to an environment where it is far harder for the young people and those outside the world of work to make it inside. What we're seeing now is senior management hoisting up the drawbridge and the barricades, staying at home in their sorry house, forgoing the commute, all colluding together, by the way, to dissolve the office and keep home working because it does suit the bosses. I think mandatory home working, a lot of that is happening, is nothing short of a betrayal of companies' duties to their employees.
I think one other factor I would just chuck in here is the UK is uniquely dependent on one city, London, for economic growth. London's attraction is as a cluster, right? If everyone is going to start working from home, it's quite hard to see people beginning to make the argument, which is, well, why don't we notionally locate the office in Dublin or Paris or whatever? Because why do we have to be in the City of London if nobody else is? And I think that is a real potential problem for the UK economy, especially in a post-Brexit landscape, which is, you know, how do you maintain London's position if it's not really London anymore? It's, you know, it's kind of the city workers are spread all over the home counties. At some point, if you put lots of people together and they bounce around, you get good ideas and things happen. And I think that, you know, the end of that is also potentially poses some real problems for the UK.
Fraser, you mentioned earlier that we should perhaps model this push back into the office on the Eat Out to Help Out scheme. That scheme has probably been very successful because it's tapped into incentives and individuals and sort of created a groundswell of support for this scheme. What are the role of employees possibly in this now? Because you mentioned, you know, the incentives for a lot of bosses might be to keep people at home. How do you think employees make their views known and try and make a difference on this and try and get back into the office?
It's very difficult for two reasons. One, the ones who want to keep working from home will be the most vocal. They'll be the ones saying, we're not sure we can go back to a COVID insecure environment, etc. There's a lot of lobbying from those who basically have got a good situation now. They're not too worried about promotion. Their aim is to keep the status quo. The ones who have the most to lose from working from home tend to be the youngest ones who would be afraid, really, of putting any kind of pressure on their employer. They don't want to be seen as a hassle or a burden. They need somebody to speak out for them. I think my own career would be impossible if I was a freelancer working from home. I look around The Spectator where I think, if I take the five most senior people in this company, two of them were secretaries 6 years ago or less. They would not have worked up that ladder were it not for this. I retweeted somebody this morning who pointed out just how fed up he is of joining a company and finding himself isolated, working from home. Basically, it's not so much working from home, it's that you're working from the office. Because your home becomes the office, you can't leave it. And lots of people don't like that. You know, I'm sort of half tempted to play out this podcast by doing Joni Mitchell, but I think perhaps something better to do is to read a piece by Jerry Seinfeld in the New York Times 4 days ago. I've got it in front of me here. He was responding to an article saying that New York is over. And here's what he has to say. Energy, attitude and personality can't be remoted through even the best fiber optic lines. That's the whole reason many of us moved to the city in the first place. You might have wondered why Silicon Valley even exists. I've always wondered, why do these people all live and work in that particular location? They've got this insane technology. Why don't they just all spread out wherever they want to and connect with their snazzy devices? Because it doesn't work. That's why. Real, live, inspiring human energy exists only when we combine together in crazy places like New York City.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening. And we've got a great offer on at the moment. £12 for 12 issues plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher. To access our offer, go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.